Hello and welcome to the Comicast, Ireland's number one comic book podcast. I'm Liam. Craig is away, but he will be back next week for our 100th episode. Do not miss it. On today's show is Alan Dunn. Alan is a Dublin-based Irish graphic designer and illustrator. He works for RTE Television and he's part of the Brain Belt Illustration Collective. He's currently working on a graphic novel called Get Off That Ship, which sets out to chronicle the true story of Frank Brown, a Jesuit novice and photographer who travelled from Southampton to Queenstown on the ill-fated Titanic. It tells a story that surrounds the famous photographs he took on that voyage with his humble Kodak Brownie No. 2 and the twist of fate that saved his life. But before we dived into that, I asked Alan to tell me a little bit about what he studied in college.
Yeah, I went to college in NCAD. I studied visual communications there, which is like graphic design, but you also do illustration and photography, and it's very good grounding overall for just jumping into visual kind of industry. You know, it's very applied as well. It's all about, you know, gearing yourself up for a final product. It's not like fine art where you could be enrolling ongoing thing, like you have a very geared kind of finishing point in mind and deadlines and stuff like that. So it's quite good for discipline. So that would be my background in college. And after I studied there, I also studied in Rotterdam for a while on Erasmus. And that was great for just getting a different perspective on graphic design and kind of realizing that Dublin isn't the only place that does this, and they don't do it like the way they do it in Dublin everywhere else. So it was quite cool.
Is that what you wanted to do from the outset?
Yeah, well, I kind of, at the very beginning, I was kind of considering architecture, and visual communications kind of appealed to me more because it seemed like I was more free and I had complete control rather than waiting for a client to come up with a big cash, load of cash to do something. So it's a really good, grounding if you want to get into visual arts. And as well, when I was in college, I was very interested in two things, one being graphic novels, and the other thing being animated graphic design, like motion graphics they call it, so stuff for TV and film, so opening title sequences and stuff like that. I quite liked the idea of narrative and kind of storyboarding something, and movement and music and all that. So like I would have been really interested in film as well, so it was kind of a culmination of all those things that I kind of got through college, you know. So I'm kind of at this kind of point now where when I got out of college, I went straight into animating graphics for TV. And I work in RTE's graphic design department, doing things like opening titles for TV shows, like for sport and current affairs. And you get to work with a lot of people, and it's very kind of, you know, controlled. So it's a great environment for discipline. Again, you know, I need discipline.
I was just going to say, some people work really well to deadlines.
Yeah, if sometimes when you're restricted with time and resources, you'd be amazed what you can pull out of the bag. Whereas if you're given all this endless amount of time and resources, you can kind of really mess something up. And it's usually like budgets and time restrictions are kind of a blessing in disguise. Like a deadline is a lifeline. I always think like if you have a deadline, you know, there's where I have to be at this specific point in time, and you just get there. You know, that sounds really angry.
You said graphic novels are one of your interests. Was that always the case since you were a kid?
Well, what I kind of grew up with was the Beano. And I really remember when I was a kid, like going crazy if I didn't get my Beano comic, you know. And I think it was every Thursday would come out or something like that. And I'd be like, I had a kind of an account with the newsagent. They kept my Beanos for me. And then when I moved from Beano to Buster, because it was bigger and it was kind of more, I thought it was kind of more grown up. But I always liked the Beano. I think the Beano is my favorite. Like the Bass Street Kids and all them, and the Dennis the Menace. I joined his fan club. And, you know, so I was kind of more, I suppose you call it Scottish comics than American. I never really was interested in superhero stuff. I was more interested in anti-hero stuff. It was like the Judge Dredd stuff when I was about 14. I used to love Slane, and the artwork in that was just, I thought it was almost like Caravaggio, the painting. And it was like, I was really amazed by that work. And then I was kind of into, you know, Beavis and Butthead, and you know, and I was kind of, I still remember going to the newsagent and the Beavis and Butthead is on the top shelf, and there, that's the shelf you shouldn't go near. That's beside like the Viz and all them, those comics which are like for adults, odd adults, me now. And it was like, I was like, oh, that's the you know, Beavis and Butthead. Me and my cousin like really liked Beavis and Butthead. He introduced me to the Beavis and Butthead comics, and I was like, I remember going, yeah, could I get that comic up on the top shelf? And they're like, I think that's for grown-ups. No, no, it's not. It's for children. It's cartoons. It's grand. So I was like, thank God, in a way, Ireland had this kind of ambiguous kind of approach to cartoon. They always thought it for kids. So they were kind of confused themselves when they saw it on the top shelf. They're like, oh, yeah, it must be for kids. So,
so they gave it to you?
Yeah, yeah, thankfully. It made me the person I am today.
So Get Off That Ship is the comic that you're working on now. Is this your first or have you worked on any before?
Yeah, well, actually, it's funny. In 2005, I heard Eddie O'Donnell, the author of Father Brown's books, being interviewed on Pat Kenny radio show. And this was the time when I was doing my thesis and in college. And during that time, we had to come up with an idea for a final year project. And I heard him talking about Titanic, and this was back then, and I just thought, that's a really amazing kind of visual story. Like, it's a story about how someone took photographs, like, and I, like, the photographs are quite unremarkable, but the context that they're in that is that, you know, this guy, unbeknownst to him, this ship was going to sink, and he took these just photographs of life on the ship, you know, very documentative of, you know, the way people just acted normally, and no, so no one was posed for photographs. There was no, none of the kind of cheese, you know, say smile, whatever, I'm taking your photograph. There was none of that. It was just quite, he like, you know, anonymously just walked around, snapped people in there doing their thing, and thought nothing of it when he got off the ship. And I just thought the whole story was amazing. And he got off, luckily, at Cove. He was asked to leave the ship by his superior back in Dublin because he kind of got the time off to do exams, apparently, and he was still a novitiate. He wasn't a fully fledged priest at the time, and I just thought that was kind of cool. He was kind of a little bit kind of like, you know, an adolescent. It was kind of like he shouldn't have been there in the first place, and he was asking could he stay on. He told no, you have to get off. So I kind of liked that idea as well. Like, you know, he was, it was just a very interesting story. And so when I heard this interview, I was kind of okay, I'll make a stab at a comic for my final year. And so that's what I did. And so when I did the comic, it was a very rough and ready thing. I did it in 2 weeks and I didn't feel like I did it justice. And I kind of said, well, I'll tackle it again when I know a bit more of what I'm doing. So cut to, I don't know, 4 years later. And then I said, okay, I better do something because the centenary's coming up. And at least if I have something out there, people will be interested in it, you know, because then you know, it's going to be topical and all that. So I set about trying it again. And so I, like, a lot of the panels exist in the original, but I kind of really changed my style of illustration, and I really kind of, you know, developed the story, and I wrote the script from beginning to end. So I kind of had a kind of a overall kind of bigger picture of what I was doing. So I became, I just developed kind of better practice in how I was supposed to do this. So, and I think that kind of probably came about from experience working in TV, because you have to do storyboards and you have to be good at translating ideas into visuals and say a lot of things with an image. It's like economy of shots, you know. So how can I say five things in one image rather than say it in five images, like, you know. And things like editing and pace, you know. Like, you'd be surprised if there's a lot of panels that do one thing, you actually slow down the pace of it. It's like a movie. You slow down the pace when there's too many kind of shots. And if you do very snappy panels, it's like snappy editing. So, like a lot of visuals actually work as editing ideas, you know. So, so I kind of like that, you know, like pauses and breaks and, you know, timing.
The first chapter of the book is online. I'm wondering if you're going to incorporate Father Brown's photographs in some way later on in the comic.
Yeah, well, I'm still thinking actually about what I should do with the photographs. Should I include them into the final project? should I like maybe show the events that led up to the photographs, so you in your mind's eye have a kind of a general idea of what maybe the picture might have looked like. And I kind of like, I quite like with the web comic at the moment, just the chapter one that's up there, I don't have any of the photographs on it. And I have a link in the about section where people, if they want to, can go and see the actual photographs off the official Father Brown website. So there's a, if people want to investigate more, they can go see it. So I, and but in a way, I kind of think people might enjoy that. I'm still unsure what people actually want. And I suppose that's probably where maybe down the line, if I'm speaking to publishers or whatever, maybe they have an input in that. Maybe they have a good idea of maybe what people wouldn't want, you know.
How long do you think it'll take to finish it?
Well, chapter one is the longest chapter, and that took like just sitting down with the script already prepared for me, hit the ground running. When I spent an entire month on it, and it was a lot of late nights as well. Like I took a month off work and I just devoted myself to it and just got it done. And I worked with a web designer called Paddy O'Hanlon. He's very good. He understood what I was trying to do, and we kind of worked very closely to the run-up of just last month, and we got it up. And so it was kind of like an intense kind of like personal project. And I just said, well, you know, that's one chapter. It took me that length of time, and I know there's a lot of level of detail I went into, and it's something I'd like to keep. So that level of, like, if I want to keep that standard, it'd probably take like the guts of a year and a half, I'd say, you know, before I've got something that I can bring to the print.
And the push was to kind of get it ready for the centenary, which is today, actually, for when the ship left
Cove, or Queenstown, as it was known back then. Yeah, so he got off. He got the telegram to get off today. So he was probably sulking at home, going, oh, I could have gone to New York. And, you know, he probably would have been, because he had a dark room in Queenstown. His uncle was a bishop there, and he would have maybe gone straight to the dark room and tried to start developing his film. So you can kind of imagine the events that might have happened this day 100 years ago, and you're kind of going, yeah, so he's there developing his photos, and he's kind of looking at it going, yeah, it was great. I wish I was there longer to take more. But had he not gotten off, you know, his photographs wouldn't exist at all. So he's got that very kind of strange situation, you know. It's kind of one of those things where, but it is cool. Like, I think it's a very cool kind of, it's cool that it's actually happening 100 years ago. So it's like, you kind of feel in your head like, yeah, this is, people are interested in this right now. It's kind of interesting, you know.
Yeah, and just all the elements of the story, the Titanic, the priest, the photographs, the narrow escape. It reminds me sort of a Tintin style adventure.
Yeah, like I did my thesis when I was in college on Belgian graphic novels.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of, I was aware of like Hergé and his origins through, actually, funnily enough, a Catholic journal which was edited by a priest. So the Catholic Church has a very interesting relationship with like European comics historically. So it's kind of funny how it's kind of maybe somehow kind of gotten back into that through this story. I just kind of think like, you know, like Hergé being someone who was interested in travel. And I learned a lot from reading Michael Farr's book on, I think it's called The Complete Tintin. It's like a book where basically he describes the level of research Hergé went to. Like, he'd use a lot of photographic references, and he'd sometimes send out, he had a studio at one stage, and he used to send out interns to like places like Geneva and just photograph the place and come back with a folio of imagery that he would just kind of, okay, this can be that building in that background. And so he's very kind of very serious about getting visual research like there. And I was kind of going, well, that's a good approach. So I made sure I just got like as much visual reference as I could for the ship. And
was Google imaging your version of those expeditions?
Yeah, like an armchair traveler. Yeah, but no, I got this great book called by Bruce Berridge called Titanic: The Ship Magnificent, and it's a two-volumed like encyclopedia on every single detail of the ship, from like the door handles to the type of soap they use to like the patterns on the furniture and carpet. And it was like, all right, this is the amount, this is what I have to kind of like keep the standard to, because it's going to be Titanic like junkies who are going to like spot like, oh, they used the wrong furniture in the smoking room. I'm not reading this and throw it in the fire. That's abomination. So I was like, okay, this is, there's people who care about the details. So I was like, I have to maintain that integrity that they are interested in, and also kind of still make it fun and not be too bogged down in, you know, fact, as in I like the dialogue I did generate myself, and I try to use very kind of Irish sounding kind of colloquial kind of stuff, because I didn't want it to be kind of stiff, because they were Irish and they were on a ship full of toffs from Britain, and you know, he probably felt like, oh, okay, this is great, like I feel like I'm, you know, shouldn't be here, and I shouldn't be here. And it's like, you know, he could have been, you know, that kind of guy. So I try to imagine it from that point of view.
How would you describe the style of art and any particular influences on it?
Yeah, definitely influenced by the likes of, say, Raymond Briggs. I really like his stuff. I like the way it's not even for a comic audience. He seems to do graphic novels for everybody. And it's that kind of thing I was looking for. I was kind of, not that I wanted to be completely general, but people who are genuinely interested in illustration and the craft of illustration, and not like I wanted it to look like as if it wasn't trying to approach graphic novels from like a generic kind of homogenous style where, you know, speech bubbles need to have that black outline and they need to have that font and they need to be, you know, done in this way and this way. Like I said, well, you know, it's a visual medium. I'll learn from people like Raymond Briggs, and I'll try to even look at, say, children picture book artists, including Irish ones like Oliver Jeffers and Chris Houghton, and they've done some speech bubble work in their children's books. And I think they're like, speech bubbles are very imaginative, like they might be just a circle with a pencil line, and I just think that's kind of, that's very different, you know. How many people have been tackling graphic novels and they haven't thought of that yet, and they just do it out of like one or two pages and like, oh, they've done something different there. I like the work of American and Canadian comic artists like Sam Bosma and Emily Carroll, and it was actually Emily Carroll's web comic, His Face All Red, that really kind of inspired the approach of, you know, the putting the graphic novel on the web just to see would people take to it. And she did a great job in her work, and I think that's really in the last, say, 2 years, that's really been a massive influence. But also there's from the Belgian kind and French kind of strain of graphic novels, like this guy called Nicolas de Crécy. He's very good. He would have been like, he graduated from Angoulême, which would be a top comics town in France, and they do an international comics festival. So he's proper royalty when it comes to like graphic novels, and he would have worked very closely on things like Belleville Rendezvous as like the art director, or the background artist and all that. Like he had a very, like he stamped his style on a lot of that work. And so that kind of French, American, Canadian thing is kind of what I'm kind of into. But there's a lot of British stuff as well. The work published in Britain, and in the past year, there's been some great stuff. Tom Gould, he's a very interesting guy. Carrie Franzmann, her new book, The House That Groaned, is very good. They're very kind of different. They kind of approach topics very differently. So it's some really cool stuff coming out.
As we mentioned, the first chapter is online. How do you feel about getting it on devices like tablets and that sort of thing?
Yeah, like, again, that would be something as I start, if I speak to publishers about maybe how it's going to get out there. Like, I definitely think something like an iPad, it takes to it very well. It's kind of something that is kind of becoming the future of graphic novels. Like, people like to have the option. So it could maybe be something that could exist both digitally and in print. And with digital like existence of something like a comic, you've got great options with things like animation and music, and there are things that I think are pretty cool. Like they can work out to its disadvantage as well, though. People can get annoyed, switch off the music, and you know, like in the way the Flash animation websites were initially interesting, and then everyone hated them because they took ages to load, and they just needed to, like, you know, use up so much RAM, and people just like, oh God, can I not just have it like regular, you know, website? So, you know, that kind of thing is worth keeping in mind as well, not to make it too trendy. I definitely think it's a good thing, you know.
I guess I have to ask, have you seen Titanic 3D?
No, and I don't intend to. Not that I don't, you know, well, actually, I just don't like the film. Well, I appreciate the craftsmanship went into it, like, and like all the work and all the effort that the costume people put into it, and all the sets and all the extra work and the special effects. For its time, it was great. But I thought it was amazing when I was a teenager, or 14, 13-year-old, just barely a teenager. And I think now when I saw it again there recently, because I was looking at it again for just like looking at the sets and making sure I was doing everything visually correct, I watched it and I was like, God, the script is pretty woeful. Like, it's up there or down there with Avatar, with the Unobtainium and the big, you know, I just thought it was quite cheesy. It's a cheesy film, but like you know, I think there's a lot of people who appreciate that, them kind of films, like there's people who love that film, and but this definitely would not be in that same category. Like, I hope not to. Maybe just Centenary will refresh people's minds of what the actual historical thing, because I even heard there on Twitter that people didn't even know it was a true event. Like,
oh yeah, I seen that, people commenting on Facebook, never going on a cruise again, I just found out the Titanic was real.
Yeah, it's like, I was like, they just thought it was a movie, you know. That's pretty bad. I don't know whether it's the film's fault or people's fault. I think it's everybody's fault. So I was kind of going, well, yeah, that film has, if anything, the Centenary has kind of whitewashed maybe a new canvas, and people can look at the Titanic in a brand new way. So maybe that's not a bad thing either. It's just like, you know, new atmosphere about the whole thing, you know.
Well, thanks very much for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Alan Dunn there. You can read the first chapter of his graphic novel, which is really good, by the way, on getoffthatship.com, and find out more about Alan himself on alandunn.ie. Don't forget, the Comicast returns for its 100th episode next week. You can follow us on facebook.com/thecomicast or on Twitter @thecomicast. Or if you'd like to send us an email, and please do, the address is thecomicast@gmail.com. See you next week.